This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A, a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Prairie Studios on the corner of Trashview and Nata Vista. Please put on your 3D glasses now. We alter your locus coeruleus by warming your synapses with rejuvenated radio waves. This keeps your brain at a tasty and toasty 365 degrees Fahrenheit to keep a sin flood of statism out of your head. And it's working. I can feel it. Can you feel it, Michael and Knight?
I feel it.
Yeah.
As always, the Freedom Fiends is covered by the BIPCOT No Government License. This allows reuse by anyone except governments and government agents. To learn more about this, go to BIPCOT.org.
Yeah. Governments and government agents are so square. You know, there was somebody sent me this thing today. My friend Jeff Ramon, who I know in real life and have for like 25, 30 years, who's I met him because he was a fan of my band Bomb. When he was like 16 or 17, he started writing me fan letters. Like, you know, we put our P.O. box on our vinyl records back then in the 80s. And, you know, seemed like a nice guy. We started talking, and when we played in Chicago one time, he came to the show and hung out, and we opened up for Flotsam and Jetsam. Have you guys ever heard of that band?
I've heard of them.
I have not.
It's a bad metal band who are known for only one thing, and that's providing bass players to better bands. Their bass player quit and joined Metallica at one point after the first guy died. The guy died before they had the guy they are now have now, and then their other bass player quit and joined a band called Prong, who are not nearly as well known as Metallica, but are really good. Their fans hated us, man. There were like 1,000 people there, and there were like, you know, 12 or 15 Bomb fans up front during our opening set, and there were like 988 people that wanted to kill us behind them.
How did you become so unpopular with them?
Because metalheads back then especially don't like anything except metal. You know, I mean, we could have been any good band that wasn't metal and they wouldn't have liked it. Also, we were, I don't know, how do you put it? Closet heterosexuals? I don't know. We like to, we like to push gender stuff before it was cool and before it was weaponized like it is now. Like, you know, I don't know. I'd wear a skirt on stage sometimes, and you know, my drummer would write the word slut on my bare chest in magic marker, and you know, just cheesy stuff. But we had the music to back it up. But you know, they didn't like it. They wanted to hear some metal. I don't know. You ever been to a metal concert? Like a real metal concert? Metalheads are very, very much one issue voters, I'd say, with what they throw a beer at. You guys ever been to a metal show?
I can't say I've ever actually been to a metal show.
Wait. You never been to a concert, Knight?
Never in my life have I been to a concert.
Not even like, I don't know, seeing a cover band at a Holiday Inn or something? You've never seen a live group perform?
I mean, I've seen a
live group
perform. I've seen them perform at like restaurants and stuff.
Yeah.
I don't really pay
attention.
That's
not a concert. Yeah. Yeah. Their background noise that you wish was quiet, were quieter. Yeah. Humans. Yeah. But so Jeff Ramon, it's a long way of getting to a completely unrelated story. Jeff tagged me in a link today of somebody, you know, like a cool article about my old band Bomb that broke up in 93. And he's like, Michael, have you seen this? And I'm like, yeah, I actually talked to the guy who wrote that a few times after that. He's a pretty cool guy. I'd actually met him. He came to see us once. And then I stopped talking to him, or he stopped talking to me, because he was unemployed for a really long time. And then he like wrote me, you know, I was like, oh man, hope you find a job. And one day he wrote me and he's like, oh, I got a really cool job and it's got benefits and everything. I'm working for the TSA at the airport here. And I'm like, oh man, don't work for the TSA. You're going to like feel up people's grandmothers and stuff. That's horrible, man. He's like, he said what every tyrant says when you say something like that, including the Nazis at Nuremberg. You know, I'm just doing my job. I'm just, I got to support my family. No, he didn't even believe that. Or, you know, yeah, that's the other thing they say too. Or I was just following orders. But, you know, at least to me, when I called him on it, he didn't say, yeah, it's for the greater good. He probably told his mom that or something. But, yeah, he said, yeah, I don't really like the idea of it, but, you know, it's the only job I can get. It pays well better than minimum wage, and I have, you know, medical and dental after 60 days or something like that. And I'm like, oh, man, you're a bad man. I said that. I said, you're a bad man, which is, that's a really good insult. Try that out on people sometimes. You're a bad man, because it implies so much. You know, you're bad at being a man.
Yeah, I could see that catching somebody off guard, too.
Yeah, and he's like, I'm going to stop talking to you now. So that was my day. I did other things today, but that was an interesting point of my day. What'd you guys do? How's your day? How's your week? How's your life?
Been playing basketball and working.
How tall are you, Knight?
I'm 5'6".
Wow. I'm 5'3¾". I used to be 5'4¾", but prednisone, the drug I was on to keep from dying over the past couple of years that I finally weaned myself off of a few months ago, actually made my bones shrink. I shrank an inch. At, you know, like what old people do, I did that at, you know, 52. You know, is what people used to do that at 60 or 70. But yeah, I'm a munchkin. But how are you good at basketball at 6?
Yeah, I'm a monster when I try, but most of the time there's just little children at the park, so I just I take it easy.
Cool. Did you get a chance to spread any liberty today? Push it in someone's face? Expose yourself to other cultures and bring them liberty?
No. I mean, I talked about, like, you know, morals and relationships and stuff like that with someone I was playing basketball with.
While you're playing? Like, you're, like, dunking and shooting all the way across the court? I don't know what it's called. You're doing basketball stuff and discussing Mises at the same time, or...?
Yeah, we were just playing like halfway, pretty much.
Yeah? What'd you tell them? How'd it come up? Because this is something I'm really interested in discussing. This is a good topic, and we should talk more about this and each go around the room and talk about, you know, how we spread the cult of libertarianism and anarcho-capitalism and voluntarism. And, you know, have you brought people to the word of Mises? No, I'm kidding. But, you know, it was one of my goals to spread it. So, and I don't want to be like, you know, like a pushy religious person in people's face, you know. So how do you guys do it? And was this guy a close friend or what happened?
This guy is a pretty close friend. I've known him since middle
school. Yeah? How'd it come up?
Well, I know his girlfriend, she was in a class of mine, and basically he was like, yeah, she's not talking to me right now because I told her that I have an addiction to something. I don't know if I can say it.
Go ahead. Say it. You didn't say his name.
Well, apparently he has an addiction to adult videos. And
is that really an addiction? I mean, I've heard of that as an addiction.
But, I don't think that counts, does it?
Yeah. I mean, I guess I think it's only an addiction if, I mean, I guess an addiction is defined as, I mean, some people say it's something you can't stop, but, you know, I would say it's something that interferes with your quality of life. Like, you know, I can't stop doing talk radio or drinking coffee. I don't know that I'm really addicted to doing talk radio, and I'm probably addicted to coffee because if I've gone like 36 hours without it before, I feel like my legs are rubber and I can't walk and I have a headache. But I don't feel like my coffee addiction is harming my life. And I've actually heard that, you know, a cup of coffee a day is actually good for your heart, and it definitely helps me with creativity. I have more than a cup a day, but probably not more than 2 cups a day. But, you know, it helps get stuff done and do a lot of things. So I wouldn't really call it an addiction. And I'd say that a lot of time people who have what they call addictions to adult videos, shall we say, is something that someone else is saying is a problem. Like, you know, if somebody's single or has a spouse or a girlfriend who doesn't care and, you know, it doesn't get in the way, I don't see that as a problem. Unless they're like, you know, they can't leave to go to work or school, or, you know, unless they're like not getting proper nutrition and hydration because they can't leave their... There's people that get that from video games, but, you know, is it really a problem? So does he say it's a problem or does his girlfriend say it's a problem?
Pretty much both. He's a very religious person.
There you go. Ding, 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 ding. All right.
He was saying, like, you know, after all of that, he felt really guilty and that God was, you know, looking down on him, and, you know, he was ashamed. But I don't know, like, she found out about that, and then she just, like, didn't talk to him all day.
You know, original sin, according to Ben Stone, wasn't sex, because God said, go forth and multiply, which means go make a bunch of babies and fill the world with, you know, humanity. Ben Stone says that original sin was when they noticed they were naked, like when they judged it. So he said original sin, you know, tree of knowledge, like basically Ben Stone has this elaborate description that I heard yesterday. It's an old one, but he said it in a bunch of shows, and I heard it on cussfreeliberty.org, which is a good place for prudish people to go, cussfreeliberty.org. It's the Cuss Free Liberty network of a bunch of shows I run. But Ben says that original sin is deciding that you can judge other people, and in doing that, you're kicking God off the throne. So literally, you know, every cop, every judge, every prosecutor who wants to punish people for things that don't really have a victim, and every voter and every nanny who clucks their mouth at people saying, oh, that's not good, at things that don't have a victim, that is the original sin. So there. Okay, go on.
yeah, he just felt so bad, and she views it as, you know, he's cheating on her.
Yeah, there's something in the Bible about, like, if you look at another woman, you've, you know, cheated, half-cheated in your heart or something like that. It's been a long time since I've been smacked around with the Bible at boarding school. But go on.
Yeah, I mean, but I kind of related with that because my girlfriend has, you know, the same opinion on it. So
mine doesn't, but I can't talk about that on a show with Knight in a couple years, or if you get a note from your mother, I'll talk about it on the show.
All right, I'll send you an email.
CC her that now. Okay. Anyway, so how you brought it to Liberty. We're going to talk about it when we get back from the break, how you brought that to Liberty. Thank you for doing God's work there, Knight. Seriously.
It's my pleasure.
We'll be back.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. Basic Handgun and Rifle with Jared Waltz.
First rule of being alive is you own yourself.
A groundbreaking approach to firearms and self-defense training. Beautifully filmed and easy to understand instructions make this one a must-have. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. New DVD from Michael W. Dean, available on Amazon.
Your house is your property.
Yeah. So, when we went to the free market, Knight was telling us about preaching the word of liberty to a friend, and when we just left, the friend was feeling guilty about his choices of reading material, and how'd you make it better, Knight?
Basically, you know, I was telling him, like, you know who you are, and, you know, you chose to be vulnerable to this person, and if they're going to be, you know, not accepting of that and not appreciate how honest you were, then, you know, there's no real point to staying with that. You always have a choice, and your choice should be being happy.
Yep.
Worms.
So it sounds like it's more about that conversation is about personal liberty. Not about, I guess we call it political liberty, but did you get into political liberty at all? I mean, I guess personal liberty is political liberty is personal liberty on a grand scale, but yeah.
No, we didn't get into that. I don't feel like he would know much about that, so.
Well, you know, when you first, I'm going to talk later about my belief that libertarians are made, are born, not made.
Right.
You know, I kind of think there are, your brother Neem and I talked about this about 4 years ago. We took it to like almost a joke length that there were like different subspecies of humans. You know, one that wants to be left alone and another kind that wants to be controlled. I think we called them Homo sapiens libertas, which was the ones that want to be left alone and don't want to control people. And then the ones that were control freaks that'll never be libertarians, we called Homo sapiens parasitis. And, you know, I don't know if I really believe that. And it almost sounds like we're, you know, asking for, you know, a blood test and have them removed from the gene pool. I'm not. But they sure do make it difficult to, you know, the ones that just have to be control freaks and have to get in every area of your life. You know, I don't really have a problem with somebody and their wife deciding, you know, we're not going to look at certain types of literature, shall we say. But I definitely have a problem with them trying to prevent other people from doing it. And I don't really even have a problem with them, like, standing on a street corner yelling why people shouldn't do it. But I certainly have a problem with them trying to pass laws against, you know, adults reading and looking at things about other adults. And it tends to be that a lot of people, in my experience, the people that don't like themselves doing it want to keep other people from doing it. There are exceptions, for sure. But, yeah, it's, you know, I don't really have a problem with religion. And I actually, I was about to say the sentence I'm about to say, and we got kicked off a station for it recently. I said, you know, I'm not a religious person. I'm not a Christian. I like the teachings of Christ. I don't venerate him as Lord and Savior. And, like, the guy who owns the station heard me say that and just fired us, like, you know, pulled the plug and put something else on and told our network about it and was really upset. But so that's where I'm coming from. Are either of you Christian?
Used to be.
I'm religious. Not.
Yeah, I don't have, you know, a lot of people are really adamantly anti-religion. I'm not really adamantly anti-religion, and I find people that are as annoying as people who are adamantly pro-religion.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, some people are like, oh, why don't you talk about more about what a problem religion is on your radio show? And I'm like, because I don't really think it is a problem. I don't care if someone goes to church. I do care if they vote on a jury to convict someone for something that's not really a crime, you know? So yeah. I'm trying to reach the liberty soul. I don't really care about the other part. And I don't know, you know, I'm kind of deist, kind of agnostic, but I guess I would have to say my best definition is I don't know what there is, and I can't say for sure there isn't. I'm laughing because there was a band called 9353 in Washington, D.C., who had a record called We Are Absolutely Sure There Is No God, and it's just, that wasn't even the topic of the record. It was just kind of a, like, you know, link bait title before there was the internet, because it, that defines what an atheist is. An atheist is absolutely sure there is no God. I'm not sure there's no God. I think there's probably there are definitely things I can't understand. And, you know, they say that religion is just, you know, explaining things that are not yet explainable by science, and it changes with time. Yeah. But I think there's things that are real that may never be explainable. You know, I mean, I think there are things that, like, you know, the bond that twins have of, like, if they're separated in different places and something happens to one, the other knows, you know. That's just an example, but I think there are things like that. Yeah.
I love the Freedom Fiends, but in this modern busy world, I just don't have time to listen all the way through every episode.
There is a solution. Go to the World Wide Web and log on to digest.freedomfiends.com and subscribe to the Freedom Fiends Digest. Digest.freedomfiends.com has 20-minute best ofs of each episode.
20-minute best ofs? Digest.freedomfiends.com sounds great. How much does it cost?
That's the best part. It's free. And if you listen at 1.5 speed, they're only 13 minutes long. Plus, the episodes are only about 15 megs, which is great, because I have a limited data plan.
Wow. I'm at digest.freedomfiends.com right now. It's so simple to use. And anyone who doesn't have 13 minutes to listen to the Freedom Fiends is a big old statist.
I agree with you about people who can't find 13 minutes to listen to the Freedom Fiends Digest. That's digest.freedomfiends.com.
Yeah. beans, freedom beans, freedom beans for you and me. All right. Knight, did you have more on that? Or you want to shift over to Shane and get some mad science dropped from him?
Let's get some mad science.
All right. So Shane, you've gone fishing for Liberty Souls two places. One is at work and one is on a philosophy forum. Which one do you want to do first? And while we're doing that, Knight, if you got another one you can think of for later.
Yeah, well, I always try to preach the word of liberty, so to speak, or as you sometimes say, bring liberty to squares. And I do that everywhere I go, whether I'm at work or just shopping at the store or even online. But I work at Amazon, and I have a lot of people that I interact with on a daily basis, and I'll bring up things in a, you know, different ways that kind of illuminate or illustrate the way that, you know, coercion and government itself is, you know, immoral. And I actually have another anarchist friend that I work with that'll back me up on this stuff. So, you know, it's kind of fun to have these conversations.
Oh, but, you tag team.
Yeah. But I was also recently added to a rather large philosophy group on Facebook. And I usually hate when people add me to groups without asking. But yeah, since this was a philosophy...
I hate it when people add me to liberty groups and voluntarist groups, because they are literally, I wouldn't say necessarily breaking the non-aggression principle, but I would say that they are doing something non-voluntary. They're drafting me into their group. And
yeah,
a lot of times people don't know that you can invite people. It's kind of not that intuitive to figure out how, but I'm telling y'all now, just poke around a little bit. You can find how to invite people rather than just add them. And it's maddening to me that Facebook doesn't have a switch somewhere in your settings that you can turn off the ability of people to conscript you for their groups.
Yeah, that very suggestion was brought up in the thread that I posted of why was I added to this group, you know?
But, well, you know why they don't give you that option in Facebook? Because to get added to a group, you have to go to the group and click, they take me off this group and then click something else. So there's basically three page views, and they count that as page views to their advertisers. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
That's a hustle.
Well, so I decided to lurk in this group to see how consistent they were in their philosophy, these you know, self-described philosophers. Yeah. And I would, you know, almost every single post, I would find some sort of logical fallacy. And then when I would point that out, then they would resort to even more logical fallacies. And then, you know, eventually just end up with straw men and ad homs.
Were they Stefan Molyneux fans?
Well, no, I don't believe so. This was just a group of, I think, philosophy-oriented people.
I find that a lot of people who are Stefan Molyneux fans describe themselves as philosophers, and also, when you point out their fallacies, give you more fallacies, including the one that Stefan Molyneux uses so much that it seems like he made it up, but he didn't really. The "that's not an argument" is one of his responses. Yeah. Another is he's trained his fans to say, "Oh, if you don't agree with him, why don't you debate him? You know, you can call in and his show." And people who disagree with him go to the front of the line, which used to be true like 8 years ago, but it's not true anymore. And I actually have debated him. I had him on a podcast of mine, interviewed him for almost 2 hours once, and about three quarters of the way through of it, he started psychoanalyzing me and asking about my childhood and my parents, and I was like, this is weird. And that was little over 5 years ago, and that's when I really started not liking the guy. But I have a problem with most people who describe themselves as philosophers. I think the thing that does not turn me off is if people describe themselves as students of philosophy or I'm interested in philosophy. But, you know, where saying you're a philosopher about yourself is pretty pretentious, I think.
Yeah. And a lot of these people that claim to be philosophers and then spout all these, you know, logical fallacies, and then when you point them out on it, they just kind of backtrack. To me, that appears more, to me, I think that's more like sophistry in philosopher's clothing, where they pretend to be these consistent logical philosophers, but then, you know, you can easily, you know, point, you know, to the holes in their logic and the flaws in their thinking. So
yeah, maybe that'll be the name of the show. Scratch a philosopher, get a sophist. A sophist or sophist? Sophist, right?
That's a good question. I'm not really sure how that's pronounced.
Well, I could spell it right. I can't say it, but I could spell it. Yeah.
Yeah.
First time I've heard that word.
Explain what it means for the people in the cheap seats. Go ahead.
Shane. Okay, well, I guess sophistry is it's kind of like using this sort of twisted logic to try to support an argument or a position, and it's not logically consistent, and there's usually ways to figure that out. I don't know all of the logical fallacies.
Oh, there's
Jeremy
like
actually
50
knows
of them.
Better than
like,
I do. Yeah, there's
50
a lot.
Or 60 of them, but and you know, the main ones though are red herring, which is where you lead someone down a wrong path. There's straw man, which is where you argue with something that's not really what they're saying. Like a good example is if you say, I don't think there should be taxes, people say you hate education and roads. You know, if you say there should be public, if you say there shouldn't be public schools and people say you want people to be stupid, that's a straw man.
Actually,
ad hominem is a common one. Ad hom is where they it's not just calling you a name. People get that one wrong. But if they're saying you're wrong because you're something, you know, like you're wrong because you're a libertarian or you're wrong because you're a basketball player, whatever, you know, that's right. An ad hom.
Yeah, an ad hom is more of a personal attack that's unrelated to the argument itself.
Right, right. But it's not just, you know, it's saying something bad about the person to say that they're wrong. Like, you know, if you're having a debate with somebody and then you go, well, what do you know about what the government should do with your money, with money? You're behind on your child support payments. Like that would be an ad hom, you know, something like that, you know? So sophistry, so circular logic, and we're going to get kicked off another station here. And I do want to preface this with, I really don't hate religion, but a really good example of circular logic is, you know, it's true because it's in the Bible, and how do you know? Well, the Bible says it's true. That's classic circular logic.
Yeah, self-referential.
Yeah. Like, who was that? Who was the guy that we talked about on this show? The filmmaker that made that horrible Liberty movie, who's actually a good sci-fi writer, J. Neil Schulman. Yeah, all of his he altered his own Wikipedia page to make him look more important, and and make it look like he had more of a contribution to the philosophy of agorism than he did.
Yeah.
And a lot of his edits got reversed by editors, good editors on Wikipedia, who pointed out that a lot of his citations were quoting his own websites or websites he was a contributor to, which is very much circular logic, because it's saying, you know, J. Neil Schulman is good because this website run by J. Neil Schulman says so. That's circular logic.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what happened with these sophists?
Oh, well, a lot of times, I'd say probably 9 out of 10 times, you can get them to recognize the flaws in their logic. But, you know, the other 10% of the time, you're just going to get into basically an argument ad nauseum where you just keep going back and forth saying the same things in different ways, and they just still don't get it. So at some point, either you or they have to give up. And he actually threatened to block me if I didn't give up. So I just left it alone.
That's got to be its own fallacy. Like, man, I don't even know what that is. Argumentum ad blockium, maybe? I don't know,
but. Yeah, I guess that would follow after ad nauseum. That would be the next step.
Yeah, and you know, I get accused of that sometimes too, because there's something that looks like that that isn't, which is on a site you control, like let's say a forum you run or a Facebook thread you started where you can delete people. If there's people... If you block people or delete people for just being a jerk, then they think, oh, I won because he blocked me and he couldn't stand my truth. When in reality, I will have civilized discussions with people who entirely disbelieve everything I believe. Like my friend Jeff Ramone, I talked about, been my friend for 25 years, for a long time, called himself a socialist, like avowed socialist. He actually did something that's a little more than just said he was a commie or a socialist. Was what's that band that's commies that are kind of new metal, but they've been around for like 20 years? Killing in the Name of is their song.
Oh, Rage Against the Machine.
Yeah. So my friend Jeff Ramone went to high school with Tom Morello, the guitar player in that band, who is kind of like, you know, he's not the singer, but he's kind of the driving force behind it. My friend Jeff Ramone turned him on to Mao's Little Red Book in grades in middle school. So without my friend Jeff Ramone's former socialism, there might not have been Rage Against the Machine, or they might have been, you know, peace, love, and hippie capitalists or something. Who knows?
That's interesting.
Yeah, yeah. But I will debate with him on things, whereas I have blocked. And he's kind of come around, too. He's kind of libertarian now, especially since, you know, basically once he got married, once he started supporting a family, he became a little less socialist and communist, as a lot of people do. Because, you know, socialism and communism are basically childish, you know, economic philosophies. They are the idea, you know, they make sense to a child. If you tell a child, well, we should take all the money from the rich people and share it with the poor people. And they're like, of course we should. It's fair. You know, so
yeah.
When you grow up and get a job and support yourself and a family, suddenly you don't want to share it with people that don't want to work.
If we can't all be rich, let's be equally poor.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the idea. Yeah, because without the, you know, for anyone listening who doesn't understand this, we all understand this, but without the impetus to create and get ahead and do things that make money, you know, humanity would all be living in ditches, dying of, you know, syphilis by age 14 and pushing berries up our nose for sustenance. Really. I mean, you know, countries that have capitalist systems are where more of the advances come from that help all of humanity. And countries that decide everything should be shared equally, you know, basically everyone ends up being a soldier with an AK-47 and a copy of, you know, Mao's Little Red Book in their pocket. And not all, you know, I mean, the technical idea of communism is that everyone has kind of a workable middle class life, but it really works out that pretty much everyone's poor except people who work for the government and they're rich.
Worms.
Listening to the Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Are you tired of stinky socialists trying to take over America?
And are you also tired of theorists talking about the free market as a cure-all for every problem with no firsthand experience of how the market actually works?
Well, the Truth, Justice, American Way app gives you wall-to-wall shows by hosts who not only understand the market, but tell you how they make money in a variety of patriotic endeavors.
The Truth, Justice, American Way app for Android is 24/7 streaming audio content on the topics of finance, liberty, self-defense, and technology.
All the hosts are all American Americans from all over America.
And the app is made in Wyoming, the cowboy state.
Because you should buy American, even with free Android apps.
Truth, Justice, American Way. Useful information, compelling personalities, and superior American audio quality.
Go on the Google Play Store or the Amazon App Store and search Truth, Justice, American Way.
God bless each and every one of you, and God bless America.
My band Bomb opened up for Rage Against the Machine once. It was,
oh, really?
Yeah, it was pretty anticlimactic. It was before they were famous. It was, we were both in L.A. I don't know if they're from L.A. or not, but we were, you know, we were playing gigs in L.A. My band was playing gigs in L.A. that week as a showcase to try to get signed. We played 6 shows, and our manager, you know, knew people from major labels who would come see a band that he managed and said, come see this band, because he had managed Jane's Addiction since they were like playing at parties. So, you know, they thought he had Golden Touch and was, you know, oh, we'll come see your new band. And we did get signed to Warner Brothers out of that. We actually should have gone with Atlantic. I think they would have given us a better deal, but the A&R guy, we were like, oh, Atlantic? Okay, we're at Atlantic Records, and we're like, you know, we really like Led Zeppelin, and we want to be on this label because Led Zeppelin was on this label. can you get us some records? And he's like, yeah, I can get you some records. What do you want? And we're like, we all want the complete Led Zeppelin box set of CDs. And he's like, oh, I can't get that right now. I mean, I could probably send it to you, but I can't get it right now. And I'm like, no, we're going to go with Warner Brothers. Stupidest, childish decision I've ever made in my life. But we were playing at this place called Club Lingerie, which is a club in L.A. Probably holds, I don't know, packed. It would hold 400 people. There were probably 200 people there. And we were opening for them. And I don't know. All I remember is that their bass player, his bass strap was missing, and he borrowed mine and was really rude about it. Like, hey, let me use your bass strap. And my manager was nearby, and he kind of like gave me a nod, like, yeah, let him use it. So I let him use it. But you know,
so you didn't
something
get to
I
talk
forgot.
Politics with him.
No, I'm really glad I didn't. I was not very politically aware then. And, you know, as when I was like 10, I called myself a communist and I had like a little Chairman Mao hat and it looked cute on me. So I decided I was a communist. But, you know, once I started mowing lawns for my dad at age 12, you know, once he said, okay, if you want an allowance, you have to work for it. I was like, all of a sudden I was not a communist.
Yeah.
But I never really, you know, if he'd started talking politics with me, I think I would have argued with him but not had much ammunition just because communists sound like religious people. And I want to make it clear when I say that we're out proselytizing the word of liberty, I'm kind of joking and in using that kind of term. Like I do actively look for places to spread the ideas because the ideas are so simple and make so much sense. You know, basically comes down to don't hit, don't steal, and don't enable others like governments to do it for you. You know, unless someone tries to hit you and then beat them enough to keep them away from you. You know, I'm not a pacifist. I like guns. But, yeah, I don't want to hurt anybody. And I try to stay out of conflict. And, you know, if somebody comes up to me on the street and starts talking smack with me, I'm going to walk. I'm going to keep walking because I'm carrying a gun. You know, I'm not one of these, like, a lot of people carry a gun and it makes them a big man. And I'm like, no, I'm just going to keep walking, man. And the only reason that gun's coming out is if they are aggressing on me, you know. If they start chasing me, I might bring it out and just stand my ground and tell them to start screaming at them, you know. And
Is it concealed or open carry?
Generally concealed. Yeah. I open carried when I first moved to Wyoming because you had to live here 6 months to get a permit. And I was open carrying one day and the guy that was the garbage man on our block saw me open carrying one day. He's like, why are you carrying that on your hip? And I said, because I can. And he's like, just put it in your pocket. And I'm like, yeah, but I don't have a permit. And I have to live here four more months before I can. And he's like, just put it in your pocket. We all do. And I found out, too, that, like, you know, like in Wyoming, carrying a concealed gun without a permit at that time was like, you know, a $700 fine and rarely enforced. But now you can carry here without a permit. But I don't have anything against open carry for other people, but I don't like to do it because I think it's, I don't think it's a strategically a good idea. Because if someone's bent on, you know, like if you're in a store and someone's like, I'm going to rob that store right now. You know, if they're just a junkie, they'll go to another store. But if they're like seriously, like, I know this place has money and I'm willing to kill to get it, they'll just shoot the guy with the gun first, you know,
yeah,
in the back of the head. So, yeah, so the thing I didn't say real quick. Yeah, go save for next time. But the thing I forgot to say, I'm going to wrap up in this time, was I said that When talking with people on the internet, I also don't argue a lot. I leave because, you know, I have a radio show. I don't need to argue on the internet. But I'll keep someone who completely disagreed with me around if they're polite. And I will block people I entirely agree with if they're rude. You know? I don't want to be like that on my property.
Yeah.
Why bother?
Worms.
Worms. Be back for hour two. After this long trip to the market and some news that will frighten you, and then come back and we'll make it all good. I'm gonna read my old report cards.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the Fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. but they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
And go on the sidebar of the Freedom Fiend site. We now have Amazon links for Amazon US, Amazon UK, and Amazon Canada due to popular demand. Worms.
Freedom Fiends, broadcasting through the Libertarian Reeducation Center's Low Orbit Ion Cannon, high atop Financial Beast Plaza on the artificial satellite LibPair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. As always, the Freedom Fiends is covered by the BIPCOT No Government License. This allows reuse by anyone except governments and government agents. To learn more about this, go to BIPCOT.org. All right, and we're back. Michael's a little low.
I'm across the room.
There you are.
With my Chromebooks. Gifts of working hard, getting to buy more tools to work hard. I like Chromebooks. Yeah. So we're going to talk about what made Michael Dean, Michael Dean, back when he was little Michael Dean, little blonde-haired, blue-eyed, future Aryan superpower of the world. No. You know, when I was a kid, this guy tried to cast me in a movie, and my dad thought he was a child molester, so he wouldn't let me go. You know, like, it was a legit thing, and well, it seemed like it.
Was it for the Spicoli character?
No, it was for. He wanted me to. I do get compared to Spicoli, though. I sound like him, and I used to look like him. But my. No, it was for some Nazi. Like, he was making some life story of Goebbels or somebody. One of the top Nazis. He said I looked exactly like him as a kid when I was like 10. Yeah, and yep, Dad quashed that plan. But you know, I'm friends with someone who was a child actor, and she's one of the most messed up people in the world that I know. I mean, she was in Disney movies and stuff, and. Maybe she's got herself a little back together more, but I'm not going to say who it is. But not anyone you'd know, but if I said the character she's played in some movies, you'd probably know. But no, not going to do her like that. So I sat in hour one before we got on here with Belfouche, South Dakota, and Sundance, Wyoming. Welcome,
Belfouche.
Belfouche. And Sundance. And yeah, I want to welcome them. They only take the second hour. You should call those stations and tell them to take the first hour. But I want to talk a little bit about what made me, because, you know, that's always a good topic, yourself. And I said during the first hour that I thought that libertarians were born, not made. Because I think there are some people who just really, really want to control other people. And they just really have this, like, pressing obsession to control other people, whether it's, you know, controlling their spouse or controlling the government, you know, controlling people, passing laws. Whenever someone says there ought to be a law, what they're saying is there should be more cops killing people, because to enforce more laws, you have to add more cops. And cops do kill people in during their job duties. You know, it happens. Like, who is that guy that, I can't remember the guy's name, but recent, not that long ago, there was a black couple, the girlfriend filmed on her phone, the aftermath of, you know, like her boyfriend dying. Well, I can't watch it. I won't watch it. Who was that? What's his name?
That was Philando Castillo, right?
Yeah. I saw something today that was really creepy, was that the cop who killed him, was like terrified for his life just because he walked up to a car that had a black guy in it. And the cop had gone to, I'd had to look this word up. He'd gone to a killology class that the police made him go to a couple weeks earlier. That is such a twisted name. That should be the name of the band. But killology, you guys heard this term?
No,
I have not.
It's the study of the science, the physiological effects of killing or combat on the human psyche. And, you know, it's something that generals study in the army and captains study in the police, and, you know, as part of their training in college. And now it's something that they send cops to because they assume they may have to kill someone at some point, and they, you know, teach them, oh, what a poor victim you're going to be when you shoot that poor guy, you know, who didn't do anything.
That's ironic.
Yeah. And this guy had taken a killology class, and one of the things they told him in the killology class was that, you know, talking about how killing somebody, even though it messes up your head or can mess up your head, is elating and makes you, you know, has this like deep psychological effect on a lot of people that, you know, is below what your brain can process. You know, subconscious, it affects you on deep levels as well as surface levels. And one of the levels, he said it, the killology professor told this cop weeks before he killed this guy, was that after, if you kill someone in the line of duty, the next time you have sex after that is going to be the best sex in your life. So that's what the cop was told. And, you know, was I mean, did that motivate him? You know, in the back of
that's
his head.
That's pretty cringeworthy.
You know, oh, I want to have that great sex. I'll murder this guy. You know, there is a thing that there statistically throughout history, throughout modern history, right after wars, there are more babies born because, I mean, it might be intentional or it might be unintentional, but after there are disasters, man-made or natural, people have more kids, to like repopulate the earth, even if they're not thinking of it that way. So maybe there's something to that. But yeah, I looked up, there's a page on Wikipedia called Killology, and I'm like, wow. And one of the main things that Killology tries to do is try to increase the number of kills per bullet fired in war. And it's been a problem throughout war that you know, nowhere near every bullet fired is a hit. And, you know, they can do things to train, like after in World War II, they did tests of firing ratios of rounds fired versus rounds hit. And it was very low, it was like 200-1 or something. So one thing they did was they trained soldiers to shoot at silhouette targets rather than bullseye targets. So basically, you know, you're hitting something that looks like a human and is bigger rather than something smaller that looks abstract like a circle. And, you know, that improved. But, yeah, it's still... And in Vietnam, it was believed that a lot of people missed intentionally because they were people... A lot of people in Vietnam didn't want to be there. That was the war.
I've heard that before.
A lot of people who were drafted really, really didn't want to be there. Whereas in World War II, there were people drafted, but a higher percentage of people signed up because by the 60s, they were just like, what is this BS? I don't want to go get killed so some Wall Street guy's stock can go up a tiny bit, you know?
Right.
And they teach you all these lies in school, like, oh, war stimulates the economy. No, war makes a little bubble in the economy for now, and then your grandchildren are still paying for it 50 years later. So, yeah.
They teach a lot of things in school that sometimes need to be unlearned.
Like what? What'd you learn in school? It's unlearned.
Oh, like how to obey orders, how to memorize useless facts, usually related to statism in one way or another.
I've heard that that the Prussian model is basic. You know, the idea of having kids go for 12 years or 13 years to sit in neat little rows at the same place at the same time is just teaching you to you know, work in a factory or be a soldier and be obedient. I heard a much shorter, like almost bumper sticker length version of that today. It was awesome. It was somebody said that public school teaches you to wait in lines.
Yeah, it does do that.
Yeah,
it
does. Yeah. I went to a boarding school for high school, private school, and it was about the same. You know, it wasn't like any different model. It was just smaller classes and better teachers. And we went to church four times a week. Back when they were figuratively beating me in the head with a Bible to get religion in me. Didn't work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Figuratively Bible thumping.
Yes, thumping me with a Bible. Whereas, you know, let's see. I know a guy who I think was literally thumped with a Bible. Will Coley. And you know, now he's a Muslim. So the Christians did not produce a Christian there. But
did you just quote scripture?
He can. I buried the lead.
I don't. I'm not familiar with Will Coley.
Oh, Will Coley's a guy who's into liberty, and I thought everyone knew who Will Coley was. You don't know who Will Coley is? He does a show on LRN called Calls to Freedom on Sunday nights. But
yeah.
He keeps wanting me to be a guest on it, but I won't go on it until he has a podcast for it. I kind of feel like it's not worth going on a radio show unless there's a record of it. You know, like
he doesn't archive it?
Right, right. If a podcast falls in the forest, does it make a sound? Not if I can't listen to it the next day. You know, it's just,
right.
I don't want to have to be in front of a computer at, you know, 8 p.m. on a Sunday night or something. That's old people radio, man. But yeah, but he's a cool guy. He goes to a lot of Liberty events, and he and some friends do food drives and raise money and, you know, cook food for anybody who wants it at Liberty events a lot. And he does some other outreach. Yeah, but he can quote the New and Old Testament better than most Christians I know. But yeah, that's because he was brought up in Tennessee in a Bible thumping family. Were you guys Bible thumped at all?
Not very much at all. My family, I guess, was Protestant, but they weren't very like devout with it or anything. And so by the time I was 18, I had only attended church about 3 times. I remember when I was about 18 and I told my mom, hey, I'm an atheist. And she actually felt disappointed, like she went wrong somewhere. And I was like, no, this is a good thing.
No. Yeah. Yeah. We're going to lose the station tonight. I know it.
Well, I was always into science and stuff like that, and so I always needed some sort of hard proof before I could like lean one way or the other on the whole thing. So
my dad's into science and a devout Christian, and I kind of like the little half jokey thing that he came up with of how evolution and the Bible make sense. He says Adam and Eve were amoebas.
Yeah. Now I do want to make a clarification: is that I'm actually more agnostic than I am atheist.
I'm deist, which is kind of like the atheism of believers. You know, deist is
right.
Thomas Jefferson was deist. It says it's basically you believe there's something, but you don't believe it grants miracles. You don't believe it intervenes in day to day basis. It's kind of more of a watchmaker God. It created things and wound things up, and then kind of went kicked back and watched it for a few billion years.
Yeah, I kind of believe that.
I believe that too. My mom actually introduced me to Buddhism, which was that was pretty cool whenever I first started practicing it. But I was baptized Lutheran. But then my church got blown away in a hurricane. Worms.
Is that God's will? Worms.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now. Cell 411 is a free app for Android and iOS that replaces government-controlled 911. Cell 411 allows you to preset a group of friends or private organizations to show up in any emergency. Cell 411 is a nightmare for the state because it proves their so-called services aren't needed. Cell 411 has had thousands of installs, and of course it's covered by the BIPCOT No Government License. Cell 411 because your friends won't shoot you when you're in trouble. Without the government, who would build the emergency services? You and Cell 411. Get it today at GetCell411.com. That's GetCell411.com.
And we're back.
Yes, we are.
I'm here with Knight Vidotti.
Brother
of the legendary Nima Vidotti. And co-creator of the Feed 'Em Fiends with Michael Dean. And as it so happens, Nima, Knight's brother, was the influence on Michael that eventually led to his conversion into anarchism. And it's really fun to listen to some of the old shows also. Because, I have the podcast, the app on the phone. And so I listen to the random shows sometimes, which go way back, almost up to 4 or 5 years ago. And some of those older shows are from back when Michael was still not quite an anarchist yet. And it's really fun to hear the influence that Nima had on Michael to lead him to liberty, so to speak.
What did Nima do to me?
Nima led you to liberty.
No, Nima led me from minarchism to anarchism.
Okay, well, he got you across the threshold, I guess, to take the last step.
Yeah, the things that, I mean, I was kind of always libertarian, and we're going to read some of these. And just, did you guys start reading this? You didn't start reading this.
No, we didn't start. It's okay. I was going to wait for you.
All right, good. Yeah, I was playing with my Chromebook. I really like it. My Chromebooks. It doesn't have a, it does, they don't have a backlit keyboard, so it's hard to use in the dark. So I got this little $10 USB-powered LED light. It's on a little thin gooseneck. So it comes out of the side and it illuminates the keyboard. And you know, you touch the end to turn it on and to dim it and make it brighter. And I was playing with that. That's why I was late getting back. It was important. But, you know, the tools of art are part of art. And, you know, people without the tools aren't artists, but artists without the tools can't really make art. So I'm kind of fascinated with the tools. It's such a time to be alive. I mean, when I was a kid, a computer took up a whole floor of a building and cost millions of dollars and required a team of scientists and lab coats to run and, you know, had less power than your phone. And the first time I used a computer was in 1974 when I was 10, and it was one of those. It was a dumb terminal at my sister's college, Hanover, New Hampshire, which that was one of the first nodes on the ARPANET and the internet, by the way, that room that I was in. And I played tic-tac-toe on a computer that was worth millions of dollars, and other people were using the same computer at the same time, because that's how it worked back then, because computers were so expensive, they did what was called time sharing, which was people all sat down and used them together, but it actually like worked a little on your program, a little on her program, a little on, and went around, and you know, everyone got a little bit of time, because computer time was so expensive. And I'm just fascinated with the changes in my life. You know, you youngsters don't know. You kind of know. Knight doesn't know, though. Although he still has vinyl records. Yeah, I told him he had to he's going to measure the distance from his computer to his router so we can get him the right length cable. And he's like, I don't have a measuring tape. And I'm like, you got any 12-inch vinyl records? And he's like, yeah. And I'm like, well, those are each 1 foot. So measure with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I, too, had to get a longer leash for my laptop recently. But it runs a lot better when it's wired.
Yeah, they really do. So what were we talking about? We're talking about libertarians made. Libertarians are born, not made. And really, I think that, you know, when people say they come to liberty, I think what they're really doing is realizing what's in their heart of hearts. Because I was resistant to being restrained as a kid. Like, my brothers and sisters were all pretty good and obedient, and they had the same parents I had. And, you know, I was always like, you know, my sisters were like in high school when I was like 3 or 2 or 1. And when I was like a toddler, like 2, they'd strap me into the stroller and, you know, walk me around like a pet and show me off and, you know, just take me for a walk. And they'd stop to talk to their high school buddies. And while they're talking to them, I would like undo 3 straps and go running down the sidewalk. Like, I did not want to, you know, be contained. And that's a desire to live. You know, in school, they call that hyperactivity. Back then, now they call it ADD or ADHD, but, you know, I just call it wanting liberty. But the thing that really brought me liberty was I was kind of a lazy Democrat. Like, I was a Democrat just probably because my dad was a Republican, and because I lived in San Francisco and then in L.A., and I thought that, you know, Republicans are mean and Democrats are nice. I actually believe that. And it was really what brought me liberty was my daughter dying of cancer and smoking pot to relieve her of agonizing pain. And the thought, like, I realized she, you know, a doctor told her to do that, but it was illegal in the state she was in at the time. Right. It was not medical marijuana, you know, meow. And the thought that she could go to prison for doing that made me really start to doubt laws. And then we got guns and a whole bunch of stuff happened at once, but we'll talk about that when we get back. Worms.
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 You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. Basic Handgun and Rifle with Jared Waltz.
First rule of being alive is you own yourself.
A groundbreaking approach to firearms and self-defense training. Beautifully filmed and easy to understand instructions make this one a must-have. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. New DVD from Michael W. Dean. Available on Amazon. Your house is your property.
My teacher said I'd never amount to anything, and they said, my English teacher said that I'd never be a writer. I said I wanted to be a writer back then, and he said I'd never be a writer because I couldn't spell, but computers happened. So I'm a writer, and I got a bunch of books, and I've been paid. Actually, three of my books are published by the biggest textbook publisher in America, right? Course Technology, Thompson. Yeah, they publish most of the textbooks in schools now, or some division of them does. So, ha-ha to our teachers. And, we were just kind of marveling about... Oh, I have a new book out, by the way. It's a new old book, but it's on Kindle for the first time. It's a revised, better edition. It's called A User's Manual for the Human Experience. And you can... Google User's Manual for the Human Experience, Kindle, and it'll come up on Amazon. Or you can go to twitter.com/freedomfiends or search Freedom Fiends on Twitter and you'll get my account. And then it's the top pinned post direct to it. It's $3.99. It's good. Get it. Read the, if you're on the fence about it, read the reviews that are on the other page on Amazon for the paperback version. There's like 25 or 30 reviews on there, mostly people I don't know who said it changed their life for the better. It's a book about getting creepy people out of your life and not getting them in your life in the future. And then the second half of it is about making a living doing what you love, which I've mostly done since the year 2000. All right, so we're going to talk about what made me, and in a bigger way, what makes libertarians libertarians, and how far back you can trace it. And if you are listening on radio and you have a kid or a grandkid or a nephew or a niece who's acting out in school, it probably means they're too smart for school. If you have a relative that's smart and they're getting in trouble in school, they're probably bored because school is dumbed down so the dumbest kid in the class can keep up. And smart kids like us don't like it. Oh, I also remember in seventh grade, the teacher was out of the class and I was like, you know, he was up there writing stuff and looking at us, looking around the room and writing stuff. And I'm like, I'm going to go see what that was. And I went up there and he had a stack of papers and he was writing down our IQs from the IQ test. And mine was 143. And whenever I get in trouble after that, I'd tell that teacher, yeah, well, it's probably just because my IQ is 143, you know, implying like that I'm smarter than the other kids, but kind of implying like I'm smarter than the teacher to his face.
Right.
We're going to first read, I'm going to put these in the show notes so you can all read them. These are scans that I have because I didn't save this stuff. My mother did. And when she died, my sister was cleaning out the house and she found this stack of papers and sent these to me. So I scanned them and put them on, they're on the Freedom Fiend site on the bio page or the about FAQ/bio, I think it's called. It's only, it doesn't have bios for everybody. It's like the founders. It's me and Nima and my wife, who helped a lot with the show early on. And it says, it's like, Michael was a handful beginning at a very young age. Examples here, 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 and here. And all those here's are links to these five things we're going to read. Okay, so
okay.
The first one is from Westfield Academy and Central School, Westfield, New York, deficiency report for math. Yeah. From Mrs.
This is
DeTondo,
Michael's math teacher from 1976.
All right, so go ahead. Why don't you read this whole one, and then somebody else reads the other one, if you want to do that.
All right.
Do
whatever. How do you pronounce your teacher's name?
DeTondo.
Mr. DeTondo? All right. So, yeah, this is Michael's math teacher from 1976, and he wrote a deficiency report that states, let's see here, notice to parents. One, the student is presently in academic difficulty in this subject, and consequently there is danger of failure. It is necessary that the causes of this deficiency be understood and the recommendations be followed. Take care to unreadable, really familiar
something
with.
About doing homework and...
Yeah, the suggested amount homework of homework.
And subject each night, I think it says. This is an old mimeograph, which was before photocopies. You know, it was this kind of drum thing that you ran. It was like a little printing press that they used in school. It was like hand-cranked. You'd crank off the copies. Yeah. And I can remember the smell of it right now. Anybody listening will remember that smell, and they'll remember that the pages had a bluish tint to the ink. And this is what this was, and the drums tended to get not clean very often, so you'd get things like this where you couldn't read it. This is analog, baby.
And then it continues, causes for deficiency, and then there's a whole bunch of like different multiple choices here, and he's
and
got
let's,
a few
let's
of them
say the
off.
Ones they say the ones they did not check.
Okay, yeah, the ones that are unchecked are poor aptitude in subject.
So I was good at math.
Yeah, inadequate foundation in the subject.
I understood the subject.
Lack of effective motivation.
They should have checked that, but they didn't.
Yeah. Poor attendance, lateness.
Yeah, I didn't realize that you could cut class until I got into college, and then I cut almost every class.
And then also unchecked is poor test scores.
Which is pretty weird, because basically, I'm doing well, I understand the subject, and I'm testing well, and I'm attending the classes. So... there's a deficiency. All right, read the four things she checked.
All right, now the four things that are checked are inadequate preparation for class, lack of serious approach to studies, inadequate written homework or notes, and lack of attention or participation.
Which what this boiled down to was I understood math fairly well. I didn't do my homework, and I didn't participate because it was boring because I already knew it. So basically, all this boils down to is, you know, doesn't follow orders without questioning them. All right. So what are the handwritten recommendations she put at the bottom here?
All right. Did you want me to continue with this, or did you want me to pass it tonight?
Read it from...
okay.
All right. Yeah. Go ahead. Pass it. Pass it tonight with Michael Appears. Read that part.
Michael appears to have many problems working in a classroom situation. He is an extremely intelligent boy, but is so undisciplined that he is accomplishing nothing, and that's underlined. I am concerned about his poor attitude toward doing homework, etc., and also his disrespect for his fellow student. If you would like to see me at any time, please contact me.
And that's to my parents. My disrespect for fellow students was me, like, screaming at kids that were bullying me. You know, I was defending myself. I wasn't fighting yet. That came later when I fought back with a bully. But basically, like, it was the kind of kids that, you know, knock your milk out of your hand and then say, "Michael dropped his milk," like that kind of bully, you know, like the teacher doesn't really know they're bullies. And I was screeching at him, man. And that's my poor attitude toward my disrespect for fellow students. It's kids that were totally messing with me. All right, so let's go on to, this was 76. Let's move on to 78. Right. This
the
is
next
from
little
the
gym we have here.
This is from the principal. It says chief school administrator, but oh wait, no, he was not the principal. The principal's name's over on the right. Oh, K through 12 principal. Yeah, but he was like the principal's boss. He ran the school. So, to whom it may concern, why don't you each read a paragraph of this, starting with Knight?
Okay. To whom it may concern, in the course of the past year, I recommended to both Mr. and Mrs. Dean that their son Michael would probably benefit both academically and socially from placement in a private school. Due to financial considerations, we also discussed the alternative of transferring to another public school in the county. Although this possibility did not seem to me to afford as much... to afford as promising a resolution of Michael's difficulties.
In other words, him going to another school in the county won't get him far enough away from us. Yeah.
The church farm school in Pennsylvania was recommended to Mrs. Dean and affords a private school setting at nominal?
Yeah, small.
At nominal cost, less than tuition payment in most county public schools.
All right.
All right. For Michael to have remained at Westfield Academy and Central School would have been extremely detrimental to him, as was already apparent to those on the staff who knew and taught him. He is a very bright boy who is well on his way to becoming a high school dropout. Private schooling is not a recommendation I make lightly, but I believe but I believed and still believe that for Michael, it was essential. Sincerely, wow. Wilma Krause, school psychologist.
That sounds like a Nazi, Wilma Krause. Yeah. and we were remarking during the break that the schools, you said school psychologist. I'm like, yeah, you know, now schools don't generally have a psychologist, do they? They have a counselor or a master's of social work, but you know, they like a school with 800 people doesn't usually have a doctorate in psychology on staff anymore, do they?
No, not that I know of. School. Not since I've been in school.
Yeah. The only place I know of a school psychologist other than this is in one of our ads. Kim Pliason, talk to your school psychiatrist and ask for it by name. That's psychiatrist, but yeah. So, which is psychiatrist is psychologist with a that can prescribe drugs, I think, is the difference.
Yes.
Yeah, so... You know, I never saw this letter until my mother died and this was sent to me. I saw the first one. The first one came home, you know, I brought it. Like, it came home with my report card, and I read it and then handed it to my parents. But the second one, I never saw it. I remember, like, my mother just out of nowhere saying that I was going to go to this school, the church farm school. And she actually brought me and said, we're going to go look at it. And she brought one of her female friends with, like, for support. I think it was our cleaning lady brought with her for support and drove the 9 hours to the church farm school. And then they just, like, they spent the night and then they just left me there. Like, they tricked me into going there, which is kind of what my siblings just did to my 95-year-old dad. They were like, hey, why don't you come down and stay near your brother, near your, you know, my brother, your son in Florida for the winter. You know, you don't like these long, cold New York winters. Let's go down to Florida. And they took him down there and like, yeah, we got this like great motel that you can stay in. While they put him in a home. Yeah. Yeah, I mean he could technically leave, but he's 95. Man, I don't know. He could probably leave. He can technically drive, but they took away his license. But yeah, all right. Let's read a little bit from the church farm school. So you know they shipped me off because I was a problem. So let's read. Let's see. The 79, February 79, October 79, December 78. All right. Oh, December 78. Read this one. Dear Mrs. Dean, do you guys have that one? Someone want to read that?
Let's see. February 79, you said December. December 78.
Dear Mrs. Dean.
Yeah. It is a great pleasure to inform you that Michael has been awarded a certificate for his performance on a national test called the National Educational Development Test. This exam is given to almost all ninth graders across the country. He scored in the 90th percentile, which entitles him to a national certificate. This was awarded today, and I am sure he will be bringing it home to show you over the Christmas vacation. I hope that you and Michael have a fine vacation together.
We're out.
Your brain are listening to
Now Means We're Out.
With Michael Dean and his weird friends.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
Get high now, but I did back then because I was bored, man. All right, so we're gonna go really quickly through. So,
all right,
we started off with school said I did really well, but they didn't want me, sent me off to another school, private school. That school said I performed in the 90th percentile nationally, but then 6 months later, a year later, here's the let's go back and forth, starting with Knight. Read the subject, the teacher, and the remark, and we'll just go through these real quick.
So we have English, and I think that's pronounced Mr.
Shuttle.
Shuttle. Yep. All right. Says, at times, Mike gets a little too sure of himself, and it results in poor averages and test scores. I hope to see a change in the future.
And then Mr. Sanderson, the mathematics teacher, said, Mike seems to have taken a very casual attitude towards his work. Unless he becomes more serious, he could soon find himself in difficulties.
And then we have Mr. Brown, who teaches science. Mike can handle all assignments with little trouble. He sometimes needs some urging to put forth that little trouble.
And then we have the history teacher, Mr. Herr. Sounds almost like a fake name.
It sounds like a Nazi. Herr.
Well, during
Mr.
the break, Mr. we joked that it's like an oxymoron, Mr. Herr.
Yeah. Okay. But Herr, anyway, H-E-R-R, Herr said, is German for Mr.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Mr. Herr said, Mike's effort and attention has both dwindled since last fall. He spends much time playing. He needs to get back to work.
Then we have your foreign language teacher, Mr. Snavely. He has begun to show modest improvement since the last marking period. He is still frequently inattentive in class and should be doing much better work.
Because I was dreaming of doing this and writing books.
And then we have your industrial arts teacher. Is that Mr. Veracruz?
Yes.
He said, slowing down a little does help. ADD much?
You know, they would have drugged me if this was 10 years later.
Yeah.
But they weren't doing that yet. They just kept sending you to different schools and dropping the problem on someone else's lap. All right.
We have your advisor, Mr. Sanderson. Mike's behavior has become less inhibited, which has had good and not so good consequences.
Okay, 2 years later, this Mr. Sanderson, his wife was our art teacher, and when we were 15, my friend had an affair with Mrs. Sanderson, and he got kicked out of school, and they both left the school and got divorced. So this guy was literally a cuck while he was writing this about me. Go ahead.
All right. And then we have the house parent, Mrs. Carlson. Michael has made a great turnaround. He has become much more cheerful and cooperative.
Yeah, he's not in class. It's free time. Of course I'm happy. All right, let's go to the next one, which is more of the same. The last one we have, which is October 79, English, Mrs. Buchanan. Go ahead.
Let's see. Mike could be number one in his class if he chose to do so. With little effort, he does well. However, if he would actively participate in class, he would do even better.
And then we have Mr. Sanderson again, the mathematics teacher.
Cock.
Mike does well enough to get by fairly nicely. However, he still behaves in class as if he were an eighth grader. Hopefully he will mature soon.
Cock. So this is in ninth grade. I'm behaving still like I'm in eighth grade. This is in ninth grade. One of my best friends was doing this guy's wife probably while he was writing this. So he should mature and become more of a man. All right, go ahead. Science.
We have Mr. Brown. Michael prefers speed to accuracy.
History.
And then we have the history teacher, Mr. Dobles.
Dobles.
Michael has begun slowly, but I am confident that he will soon begin to pick up speed.
Wait. The other guy said I have too much speed, and this guy says
said
I
you
want
prefer
speed.
And then he says you're going to pick some up.
I didn't prefer speed. I preferred heroin. Oh, wait, that was years later. Never mind. And then I got sober. All right, quick. We got two more. Foreign language. Hurry up. We need speed.
All right, Mr. Snavely.
What did Mr. Snavely say?
Mike has not made a good start. He seems to rather create a disturbance in class and contribute to it. There is much room for improvement.
And then your advisors, Mrs. Shaw and Mr. Snavely, said, in spite of changing house parents in the cottage, Mike seems to have helped his cottage mates keep on the track. We hope he will have a good year and are looking forward to working with him.
Yeah, the only people that like me are the people that I'm not being required to remember stupid things that don't matter. So yeah, at home I'm fine. In class I'm bored. That's a libertarian. This all adds up to a libertarian in the making. You know, I want to learn. I was too busy learning to pay attention in class, basically.
Worms.
All right, worms. It's been a good show, guys. For something with no show notes.
We did that was fun.
Our one show notes. Yep. Worms.